Hi, I'm Mark from Annandale, New Jersey.
I'm Chris Nelson from South Dakota.
I'm Jen from Oakland.
The Sound of Young America is an independent production
supported by listeners like me.
If you'd like to support the show like I did, visit MaximumFun.org and click on Donate.
I'm Jesse Thorne, live on tape from my house in Los Angeles. It's The Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org and PRI, Public Radio International. It's The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. Once in a while, our friends from the AV Club join us to tell us about stuff that we might have missed but is worth finding in the world of popular culture. Joining me are the editor of the AV Club, Keith Phipps, and associate editor, Tasha Robinson, from their offices in Chicago. Keith, Tasha, welcome back to The Sound of Young America.
Hello.
And thanks for having us.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have you. Keith, let's start with something that you recommend. I had no idea that there was a 1933 version of Alice in Wonderland, much less that it had Cary Grant, Gary Cooper, and W.C. Fields in it, among other members of an all-star cast. I guess this thing is coming out on DVD to coincide with what I'm sure will be a very similar version of Alice in Wonderland from our friend Tim Burton. Let's hear a scene from the 1933 film.
What a strange head. Curious. Curiouser and curiouser. It's bigger than a chicken. Why, it's Humpty Dumpty.
Don't stand there staring at me as if I were an egg. Tell me your name and your business.
My name is Alice.
It's a stupid enough name. What does it mean?
Must a name mean something?
Of course it must. My name means the shape I am. And a right handsome shape it is. With your name, you might be any shape.
So, Keith, how come I've never even heard of this movie with Cary Grant and Gary Cooper and W.C. Fields and others?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. One, I don't know that it was hugely successful at the time, and it's not... a la Wizard of Oz, all that, did not have a legacy that got passed down from one generation to the next, as parents passed it on to children. For another, you could see this movie and still not know that Gary Cooper, W.C. Fields, and Cary Grant are in it. They're all deep, deep in costume. Cary Grant plays the Mock Turtle. And W.C. Fields plays Humpty Dumpty, and they're all in costumes based on the original illustrations that accompanied Lewis Carroll's book, and they're very peculiar. They're very kind of grotesque. It's strange because in some ways they try to soften some of the darker elements of Alice in Wonderland and through the looking glass. But Alice is very sweet. She's very happy the entire time. But a lot of the kind of more disturbing elements of it kind of creep into the back door in this production design that Dave Keir points out is more like a horror movie than a fantasy. It's a really interesting movie and not necessarily an entirely successful one, but just kind of fascinating.
It sounds a little bit Return to Ozzy. I remember having a lot of nightmares about Return to Oz as a kid.
It's not something that's going to soothe kids to sleep. That's for sure. I mean, for one thing, that there's the famous croquet scene in which their flamingos are used as mallets, and it's staged with real flamingos. Which thankfully, there's actually nobody's hitting croquet balls with flamingos' heads, but doesn't mean the flamingos look very comfortable either.
I can hardly imagine they would be. Tasha, normally the Oscar shorts part of the Oscar telecast is the absolutely most baffling part because, to put it frankly, basically nobody ever sees short films except for, the occasional festival goer and maybe an agent who represents filmmakers. But this year, all of the Oscar shorts are doing a little tour of theaters, and they're also available on some cable systems and from digital platforms. Let's hear a scene from one of the nominated animated shorts, Wallace and Gromit, A Matter of Loaf and Death.
Ah, lovely copper, Gromit. But
A slightly diesel-y aftertaste, perhaps. How's that breakfast coming on? Well done, lad. Very well done.
Tasha, have you actually, I mean, is watching short films even part of your vocabulary since maybe you took a film class in college?
Oh, sure. I mean, it's actually become a little more common for over the past few years for the Oscar shorts to tour. And the programs are often incomplete. Sometimes the touring programs can't get the rights to all of them. So I've actually been to theaters and seen, you know, touring Oscar shorts programs that are, you know, 3 of the 5 animated nominees and 2 of the live action shorts and 3 of the documentary shorts. And you just kind of have to fill in the blanks yourself. But this year, Shorts International is actually touring theaters with all 5 of the animated nominees and all 5 of the live action nominees. And I don't see a lot of shorts normally. I mean, apart from Pixar doing the short film before their full-length animated film every year, there's just not a whole lot of market for it anymore. But I actually enjoy it. I mean, it's sort of the equivalent of sitting down with a good collection of short stories. And of course, these are at least what some people in Hollywood think the best of the year are. So you're usually guaranteed of getting, you know, at least a little variety and some interesting stuff.
Did you see anything that particularly jumped out at you as of note?
Well, the 2 that stood out for me from the animated program, there's a Spanish short called The Lady and the Reaper, which is about an old woman who is literally, she's on her deathbed, sort of having visions of joining her husband in heaven, and the Reaper shows up for her, but she's pulled back at the very last second by a doctor, you know, who's literally standing over her with the paddles, like yanking her physically back from the other realm. And it turns into this sort of battle royale between the Reaper and the Doctor, both of whom are sort of over the top, larger than life characters. There's also a much longer French piece called Logorama that's getting a lot of attention. It sort of takes place in this magical animated space where everything is made out of commercial logos. You know, the cats wandering the streets are Jaguar logos. All of the people are Michelin men or like the Pringles man or what have you. And Ronald McDonald enters into it as this sort of psychopathic, gun-wielding sociopath on a rampage. There's a lot of foul language. There's a lot of violence. It's very over the top. It's very comedic. The design is amazing. It's too bad that the shirt doesn't really go anywhere.
Keith, let's talk about Johnny Cash. It's been a few years since he died, and the 6th in his series of American recordings called American Six, Ain't No Grave, was just released on CD. Let's start by hearing a little bit from the record.
There ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. When I hear that trumpet sound, I'm gonna rise right out of the ground. Ain't no grave can hold my body down.
Well, so Keith, there's been 6 of these stripped down recordings of an elderly Johnny Cash. Is this somehow different, or is it the good kind of more of the same?
It's a little bit of both. I think the style is recognizable from the other collaborations with Rick Rubin, who in 1994 kind of wrote in and gave Johnny Cash his career back by letting him record these sort of stripped down songs, giving him good material to work with, giving him room to be Johnny Cash for the first time in a long time. And the series kind of begins with this career renaissance, and it follows Johnny Cash through death and now beyond. There's been 2 posthumous albums, this one in American Five, its predecessor, and they're both taken from sessions when Johnny Cash is audibly at the end of his life. This is the sound of a sick man, but a sick man with a very powerful spirit and still deeply affecting voice. This is thematically very much a album about death, and as so, it's really quite effective and haunting, but it's also uplifting, too. There's a lot of evidence of Cash's faith. There's a lot of songs on here about casting off burdens and ending suffering and having faith in a better world than the one he's been living in a life without sickness and a life without loneliness. And it ends with Aloha Oe, the famous Hawaiian song that ends with We'll Meet Again. And this is from a man who to the end of his life, after he'd lost everything, still firmly believed that. It's really quite a striking album, and I would highly recommend it.
One of the only criticisms I've heard of this album is that one of the byproducts of him having made these incredibly powerful stripped down recordings in his, in his dotage, is that you lose a little bit of the fuller picture of him as a musical artist. Like you lose out on the part of him that was like a Sly Fox kind of thing, or, you know, there's these other notes that you miss out on. Did you miss those on this record at all?
They're not too evident here, but again, I think context is important. Certainly the puckish Johnny Cash is not going to show up on his deathbed, and that's okay. And I don't know that his, recordings with Rick Rubin have been totally devoid of that either. I think there's a lot more playfulness on the first couple of albums that they did together.
Natasha, I want to ask you about something that you sent me an email describing, and it sort of boggled my mind. It's this graphic novel called Meanwhile. And I feel like not having one in my hands, I feel like I could only do a second-rate job of recapitulating what you told me about it. So tell me, like, how would you describe this thing?
Well, essentially, it's a flowchart in book form that's a choose-your-own-adventure story. I mean, people who were kids in the 80s probably remember choose-your-own-adventures, where you read a little text and then you have to make a choice. And based on your choice, you jump to one page or the other, and the story continues, you know, with you having made that choice. And it leads you in one direction or the other. This is exactly like that, except in graphic form. You start off, there's a little boy. He walks into an ice cream store. And the guy behind the counter asks him if he wants vanilla or chocolate. You get to make the choice. If you choose vanilla, you go off in one direction following a line, and pretty much nothing happens. You go home and tell your dad, well, ate some vanilla ice cream today, the end. If you choose chocolate, you launch on this epic adventure that jumps from page to page. The designer is a graphic novelist out of Oakland named Jason Shiga, and he's actually come up with this very neat style where there are a series of little tabs sticking out of the book. And you follow the lines across those tabs from page to page. He has the story build as more than 3,800 different story possibilities as you're sort of following all of these different threads through the book, you know, being faced with choice after choice of what to do. And the conclusions you reach can get really outlandish. I mean, you can destroy all life on Earth except yourself. You can, you know, meet yourself traveling through time. You can become your own father. It gets very, very complicated. And it's just sort of a fascinating artifact. I mean, it's one of those things where you, in a way, it gets frustrating because there are so many loops and there are so many options, but they all tend to kind of lead back in the same direction. So, I found myself just spending hours paging through it, looking for new options, looking for new choices to get off to pages I hadn't seen before.
What was the toughest choice for you to make? Was it vanilla or chocolate or something deeper in the story?
The day I have a difficulty deciding whether to eat vanilla or chocolate ice cream is the day I lie down and die. No, it's more choices like, do you press the button that's going to kill everybody on Earth except you? Or, you know, do you walk out and go home? I mean, One Direction leads to tragedy, but it's a lot more interesting. The other one might lead back to where you came from before, or might lead you to utopia. You never know until you get there.
Well, Keith Phipps, Tasha Robinson, thank you so much for guiding us once again through the dangerous shoals of pop culture that's not worth paying attention to, and to the golden shores of the good stuff.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much for having us.
Keith Phipps is the editor and Tasha Robinson, the associate editor of the AV Club. You can find them online at avclub.com and in the pages of The Onion in newsstands across America. That's our time for another Sound of Young America program. I've been your host, Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart. The show produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our theme music, and indeed all of our music, provided to us by Dan Wally. You can visit us online at MaximumFun.org and email me directly, personally, at Jesse, J-E-S-S-E, at MaximumFun.org. We'll see you next time, right here on The Sound of Young America.
Production of The Sound of Young America is underwritten in part by Ask Metafilter. Thousands of life's little questions answered online at ask.metafilter.com.